Singapore is a city that has earned global acclaim for its safety and low crime rates. The government's steadfast commitment to law and order, backed by efficient law enforcement agencies and strict regulations, has made the country a safe haven for both its residents and visitors. But in the 1970s, it wasn't always the case. Back then, as a budding nation that was struggling to get on its feet, Singapore faced various social and economic challenges, including poverty, unemployment, and political instability, which have all contributed to a higher incidence of crime. In those days, the sense of security that Singapore is known for today was not always a reality. The year was 1979, and the entire nation of Singapore had just been rocked to its core by a gruesome and senseless crime. News of the brutal murder of the Tan family's four innocent children sent shockwaves of horror and disbelief throughout the community. Everyone was left scratching their heads in bewilderment, struggling to answer a question that weighed heavily in their minds. Who could have committed such a heinous act? Or rather, why would anyone want to harm four innocent children? The already harrowing situation took an even darker turn when a mysterious Chinese New Year greeting card was unexpectedly sent to the Tan family's household. Upon reading it, the couple was plunged into further devastation. Not only had the sender of the card addressed the parents by their personal nicknames, it was also signed with the bone-chilling words, "The Murderer." This fueled major speculation that the anonymous sender had close ties to or intimate knowledge of the family. It also made the task of solving the case even more challenging. As the murder case investigation unfolded, more intriguing clues emerged. Just 8 days after the gruesome crime, a vigilant taxi driver's call to the police changed everything. According to the records, the taxi driver had reported picking up a man in his 20s near the crime scene at approximately 8 a.m. As the car approached the man, the driver couldn't help but notice that the man's left side was smeared with bloodstains. What caught the driver's attention even more was the object that was protruding from the man's waistband, resembling a handle of a knife. Upon reaching his destination, the man exited the taxi, but as he was doing so, the knife had inadvertently struck the door and fallen to the ground, immediately catching the driver's attention. This was the breakthrough the police had been waiting for, the key to solving the case and bringing the perpetrator to justice. All the pieces seemed to fit. Bloodstains on his clothes, a knife in his possession, his close proximity to the crime scene, and the timing of his departure. It had to be him. With the potential culprit identified through the taxi driver's report, the authorities were determined to track down the mysterious man. You're listening to Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast brought to you by MediaCorp and produced by 1UP Media. This episode contains scenes of graphic imagery and violence. Listener discretion is advised. According to the taxi driver, when he inquired about the bloodstains, the young man claimed that it was the aftermath of being beaten up by someone. But this raises the question, was it a coincidence that the young man, who had bloodstains on his shirt and a knife handle protruding from his pants, was found in such close proximity to the crime scene? Well, the short answer is the authorities don't know, but given the circumstances at the time, he became the prime suspect in everyone's minds, and all fingers pointed towards the young man as the possible murderer. Following the taxi driver's report, the police swiftly assembled a team to track down and arrest the mysterious young man. Based on reports, the man was later identified as Uncle, a Malaysian national who happened to be a neighbour of the Tan family. It was revealed that Uncle would frequently visit the Tan family's home to borrow their phone and make calls back to his home country. In the 1970s, owning a telephone was not as common as it is today, and not everyone had easy access to a phone in their homes. This led to a common practice of borrowing phones from neighbors or friends to make calls. In many neighborhoods at the time, it was common for residents to share their phones with each other. It helped build a sense of community, camaraderie, and togetherness. This was particularly helpful for individuals who had limited financial resources or who lived in low-income areas where owning a telephone was a luxury. Moreover, during the 1970s, telephones were typically large and cumbersome wired devices that required connection to a network of telephone lines installed in homes. As a result, in order to borrow a phone from a neighbor, it was necessary to physically enter their house. Given that the young man was a familiar face in the neighborhood, it is likely that the children would have readily agreed to let him in and use their phone. But this sense of community and familiarity that characterized the Geylang Bahru neighborhood may have made the children unaware of the danger that lurked beneath his seemingly benign appearance. However, 2 weeks after his initial arrest, Uncle was eventually released by the police due to a lack of concrete evidence linking him to the crime. The turn of events left many baffled and frustrated, and understandably so, as Uncle had appeared to be the prime suspect in the case at the time. After his release by the authorities, Uncle and his sister moved out of Block 58, but the reasons why aren't particularly clear. Now that the investigation into the mysterious young man had hit a dead end, the police turned their focus to the card that had been sent to the Tan family. The card, with its chilling signature of the murderer, would become a haunting piece of evidence that loomed over the entire investigation. It held the promise of providing crucial clues and insights into the identity of the perpetrator. However, the investigation was impeded by the technological constraints of forensic science during the 1970s. Tracing the sender of the card was nearly impossible. Any potential fingerprints on the card could not be tested or traced due to the lack of advanced forensic technology at the time. Additionally, the fact that it was the Chinese New Year further complicated matters, as sifting through hundreds and thousands of cards to determine where the card was purchased from would be nearly impossible. This unfortunate limitation hindered the investigators' efforts to identify the sender and unravel the mystery behind the killings. As a result, they were back to square one. The card remained a tantalizing piece of evidence that could not be fully utilized in the investigation, which once again left everyone grappling with the question of who could have committed such a horrific act and why. To make matters worse, more and more potential clues began to surface. One neighbor came forward with an account that a suspicious man had mistakenly knocked on a door 5 days before the tragic incident. According to her, the man appeared agitated and in a hurry. But before she could react, he left abruptly without providing any explanation. Despite extensive efforts, the police were unable to identify or locate this mysterious individual, leaving more unanswered questions about his potential connection to the murders and what his intentions might have been. Another neighbor revealed that Li Meiying, the mother of the four children, had lost her keys approximately a month prior to the incident. But to everyone's surprise, the family did not take the precautionary measure of changing their locks, despite the potential security risk. This revelation raised serious concerns that the killer may have gained entry into the Tan's family home using the lost keys. If the killer had the keys, it would mean that they had unrestricted access to the residence without ever having to leave any signs of forced entry. But once again, despite the efforts to pursue these leads, police were unable to obtain concrete evidence or make significant progress in uncovering the truth. It's difficult to fathom why someone would go to the extreme of killing four innocent children. But perhaps an expert's insights may help to shed some light behind the motive. According to Dr. Majid Kadir, the chief psychologist for the Ministry of Home Affairs, There are several possible reasons that may drive individuals to commit such an act. One plausible explanation that he gave is that the children may have witnessed something that the criminal wanted to keep hidden. In an effort to silence potential witnesses, perpetrators may resort to killing children who could have seen something incriminating or could expose any illegal activities. Another possible reason is what is known as mercy killings. Some perpetrators may believe that the world is too harsh or cruel for children to endure, and in a misguided sense of mercy, they may take it upon themselves to end the lives of innocent children. This twisted rationale may be driven by a warped sense of compassion or a distorted belief that they are sparing the children from future suffering. A third motivation, as identified by Dr. Kadir, is what is commonly referred to as murder by proxy. In this scenario, the criminal is trying to get at someone else, and the children become innocent victims in an act of revenge killing. The criminals may intentionally target children as a way to inflict emotional pain or harm on someone else, using the children as pawns in their twisted agenda. Finally, another possible reason for the heinous act of killing children is sexual motivation. In certain cases, criminals with deviant sexual tendencies may specifically target children as victims for their own sexual gratification. The reasons for this could be a perverse drive for dominance and control, combined with deviant and abnormal sexual desires towards young children. In the wake of the cold-blooded killings, the four siblings were laid to rest at Choa Chu Kang Cemetery in a heart-wrenching ceremony. They were dressed in their best clothes, a somber reminder of their young lives cut short. Alongside them, their school bags and cherished toys were placed in their respective burial spots, serving as poignant reminders of the playful innocence that was stolen from them. As the burial proceeded, sources indicate that Li Meiying, the grieving mother, struggled to come to terms with the reality of burying her beloved children. Overcome with unbearable grief and anguish, she fainted multiple times, unable to bear the weight of the devastating loss she had experienced. Even to this day, the identity of the perpetrator behind the heinous murders remains a mystery. For the couple, the lingering questions, the lack of closure, and the injustice of the unresolved case have also exacted a toll on their emotional and mental well-being, leaving them forever haunted by the traumatic events that unfolded in their home. Sources state that the couple abandoned their minibus business and instead sought employment at a plastic manufacturing firm to make ends meet. In December 1983, Li Meiying underwent a reversal of a sterilization and subsequently gave birth to a baby boy. The birth of their son brought a spark of hope amidst the darkness that had engulfed their lives, but it's undeniable that the memories of the unresolved murders continue to cast a long shadow. With advancements in forensic technology and investigative techniques, the approach to solving crimes today has evolved significantly since the 1970s. If the Geylang Bahru murders were to occur today, the police would have employed sophisticated methods such as DNA analysis, fingerprinting, and enhanced surveillance to gather evidence and track down the culprit. The case would likely be handled with modern investigative tools and resources. But the unresolved questions and lingering mystery would still pose a challenge. In April 2021, CLS, or Crime Library Singapore, a charity drive to raise awareness on unresolved cases, conducted a revisit of the Tan family murder case and brought to light new information that had not been previously disclosed. One significant revelation was that the actual scene of the crime was located on level 5 of the building, contrary to the early reports that had indicated it was on level 4. Furthermore, CLS also uncovered that some of the Tan family's neighbours had crucial information that had not been shared with the police during the original investigation. While the exact details of the undisclosed information were not provided, it did add a sense of intrigue to the case, leaving many wondering why these neighbours had not come forward earlier and what other crucial details they may have been withholding. While the newly unearthed information provided by CLS could not be independently verified at the time, it reignited hopes of finally solving the crime that had remained unsolved for over four decades. In recent news, a local media outlet was able to locate Miss Lee, who is now in her 70s and residing with a grandson. Upon being informed that the investigation into the case had resumed, Miss Lee fell silent for a considerable period of time, her eyes welling up with tears. While she appeared reluctant to delve further into the past, she nodded in agreement when asked if she held hope for the case to be solved, and she expressed her willingness to leave the matter in the hands of the police. As for Mr. Tan, well, Miss Lee reveals that her husband had passed away before the murders could be solved. If you or anyone you know possesses any information that could assist in solving this case, please reach out to Crime Library Singapore. Their information is in the description. While the trauma inflicted upon Miss Lee may remain for the rest of her life, the pursuit of truth and justice for the victims and their loved ones will always be a priority. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Heinous, an Asian true crime podcast brought to you by MediaCorp and produced by 1UP Media. If you would like to share some feedback or suggest other cases that you would like us to cover, head on down to our website at asiantruecrimepodcast.com. This episode was researched, produced, and written by Yeo Guang Jin, with audio engineering by Ethan Sam. Special thanks to executive producers Danny Cordy and Barry Toh from MediaCorp. We hope to see you again soon in the next episode of Heinous.